On the day of President Trump's climate change decision, Europe and China move closer together. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. President Trump is set to announce this afternoon if the U.S. is in or out of the Paris Climate Accord. The betting is the U.S. will repudiate the agreement, but it's possible the decision is still in play. Today, two of the world's other economic powerhouses are doubling down on the fight against climate change, China and the European Union. In fact, China's Premier Li Keqiang is meeting with EU officials in Brussels about this and trade. David Shookman, science editor for our editorial partner, the BBC, has been covering the human effects on climate for many years. He joined me from London this morning.
You've got the European Union with 500 million people and some powerhouse economies there like Germany. You've got China, which has risen dramatically on the world stage as an economy. And both of them see, for their own logical reasons, a motivation to tackle climate change. In the case of China, the rising middle class are fed up with polluted air. You see open demonstrations calling for moves to renewable energy to clean up the pollution. In Europe, you see business opportunities. You also see a groundswell of popular support for cleaner energy. These two great economic powers want to act on climate change, whatever anyone else does.
Now, corporations, for their part, are not speaking with one voice about Paris, but you do see a significant number of larger organizations that have embraced the Paris Accord.
I was struck at the last meeting of UN climate negotiators in Marrakesh, Morocco, last December. And there you had a coalition of US businesses with, I think, something like $1 trillion in assets saying, we will act on climate change. We see a rationale for it. We see business opportunities in developing and selling clean energy technologies. And I think it's a signal, particularly for multinational corporations, that there's a logic to acting on this, regardless of whatever else happens.
And David, what do you make of the argument? We're hearing this from some sources that if the Trump administration was just going to be half-hearted about climate change, it may be better if it turns out they're pulling out anyway.
I think not to have the Americans around the table in a process that's built as something to help save mankind in the future, I think will be a blow. We shouldn't discount the political, the diplomatic impact of this, even though, as we've been discussing, there is this groundswell of business momentum and momentum from other countries to act even so.
David Shookman is science editor with our editorial partners at the BBC in London. Mr. Shookman, thank you.
Great pleasure. Thank you.
Checking markets, the FTSE in London is up 0.4%. The Dow future is little changed. The NASDAQ future is up 0.2%. Hi, David Brancaccio, stepping out of my anchorman role for a second. It is the final week of fundraising before our books close for the year. We're asking you to step up and help support us today so that we can continue the in-depth, independent economic coverage and innovation coverage and business coverage that you rely on. Any amount, even a small donation each month, really does count. We appreciate your support. Give today at marketplace.org/donate. Home health devices like insulin pens, glucose monitors are getting cheaper and easier to use. Now, in theory, the devices are tools to help improve care and possibly slow health spending. These are among the reasons why people are so bullish about the future of this industry. But from our health desk at WHYY, Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein reports even if the technology is ready, doctors prescribing them and patients using them may not be.
6 months ago, John Halemka surprised himself. He took his blood pressure and found it was scary high, 170 over 100.
How could that be? I'm a vegan with a body mass index of 21, constant exercise.
Was it stress from work? He is the chief information officer at the Beth Israel Deaconess Hospital System in Boston, or maybe his diet.
So my primary care physician said, well, let's measure your blood pressure over the course of the day, before and after the commute, before and after a cup of coffee.
For $125, Halemka bought himself a blood pressure cuff and an EKG device to measure his pulse. He sent the data from those devices through his phone to the doctor's office.
And my doctor was able to say, you know, it isn't your life. It isn't something you're eating. It's your genetics.
Instant diagnosis. Beta blockers in hand that day. This dream scenario explains the optimism behind market research firms' predictions that home health devices will grow into a $100 billion industry in 5 years. Companies have noticed that delivering results in less than 24 hours, results that right now can take weeks, could be a gold mine.
The technology is just developing so fast that people are having trouble keeping up with it.
That's Kathy Dion, managing editor of Home Health Technology News. She says manufacturers are cranking out devices to treat diabetes, COPD, and high blood pressure. Physicians are pulled in because they want to see what's happening across a patient's life, more than what they can measure in their exam rooms. Dr. Joseph Kavadar at Mass General, a leading researcher in the field, says when doctors monitor blood pressure consistently, for example, good things can happen.
If you follow a cohort of people with blood pressure that's out of control, they'll have stroke, kidney failure, heart attack. Whereas if you take that same cohort of individuals and you're able to control their blood pressure, they will have fewer of those events.
Kavadar says a sliver of doctors and hospitals, maybe 10%, have gotten serious about home monitoring. It's still early days for several reasons. The devices kick out a bunch of data, and it's tough to hear the signal through the noise. There are few financial incentives to do it, expensive equipment, and it's not a great fit for some patients, patients who need blood pressure cuffs and to download the app that share that kind of data.
What we find right now is a number of people who are very much in need of the service either don't want to buy the cuff, can't afford the cuff, don't even know what it means to download an app.
The other issue, says Kavadar, no one's demonstrated this approach saves money. It sounds like it should, and maybe it will, but it's not there yet. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
And two huge companies that are not household names but are all over houses are calling off a nearly $27 billion takeover. PPG Industries of Pittsburgh, which makes a lot of paint, is dropping its bid for AkzoNobel of the Netherlands, which also does paint. The takeover got acrimonious, so that's that. I need to brush up on the paint biz. I'd forgotten that last year Sherwin-Williams bought Valspar for more than $9 billion. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.